नमो भक्ति विनोदाय साक्षिदानंद नामने गौर शक्ति शिल्पाय रूप निर्भराय थे। I offer my respectful obeisances unto Satchidananda Bhakti Vinod, who is the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, handed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Hare Krishna. So of course today is the appearance day of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. This song that we just sang, Jai Radha Madhava, which Srila Prabhupada instructed us or showed us by example to always sing before every Srimad Bhagavatam or every class, of course, is written by Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And Prabhupada explained it's such a wonderful view of Vrindavan. Because everything is there, Prabhupada said. The Yamuna River, the trees, the groves, Krishna, the gopis, Mother Yashoda. It's a complete portrait of Vrindavan. And so we've had the good fortune that you did not have to hear me sing it at the beginning of the class, but we had this very, very wonderful, wonderful rendition by our Bhaktivedanta Academy older class. So thank you very much. So this, of course, today we're going to hear about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but I also wanted to put it into a broader context of his sampradaya, of where Bhaktivinoda Thakur fits in historically, what his contributions are, and why this is so important to us. So, as we usually start with the Bhagavad Gita verse, I'm going to read Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, text 2 and 3. Text 2 is, evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidhu sakalanena mahata yoganishta parantapa. The supreme science was thus received for the chain of Pacific succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. But in course of time, the succession was broken, and therefore the science, as it appears, to be lost. And text 3. That very ancient science of the relationship with the Supreme is today told by me to you, that is Krishna to Arjuna, because you are my devotee as well as my friend, and therefore can understand the transcendental mystery of this science. So this is interesting. Krishna, of course, comes for many reasons, but one of the reasons he comes to this material world is to reestablish Dharma, or to teach religious principles to the conditioned souls in this material world. So, of course, he does that when he recites the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. But one of the reasons he had to recite the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, as he said that he had given these instructions, but they were lost. The descendant succession of Bhagavad Gita, to start out from the sun god to Ikshvaku to Manu, had been lost. So he had to give it again. So just as Krishna speaks spiritual knowledge, sometimes it's lost throughout history, and then he has to revive those teachings. In the same way, we can look at the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur and see something. We don't want to say similar, of course, because we're talking about the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but there are certainly some parallels, some strong parallels of the work of Krishna's devotee to his own work. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in many ways responsible for a revival of Vaishnavism, a revival of the message of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to chant the Hare Krishna mantra and spread it throughout the world. So we'll be talking about that in a little bit, about this amazing and wonderful contribution to the world given to us by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we take a step back and we look at what is Krishna's purpose in this world. How does Krishna give spiritual knowledge to the conditioned souls? Most living entities in this material world are bereft of spiritual knowledge. They never have it, or they've forgotten it, or they're not interested in it. So Krishna comes himself, when he appears as himself, an incarnation, an avatar. He comes by giving the scriptures throughout the world, and he also comes through the spiritual masters, the teachers, the sadhus and saints, who come to this material world to give us the knowledge of God, and the knowledge of who we are in relationship to God. So, as Krishna disseminates this knowledge, gives it through different great, great devotees of his, who then carry it down one spiritual master to another in what we call this line of disciplic succession, or sometimes we call this parampara, knowledge given from one master to a student, that student to another student, etc. Now, these lines or successions we sometimes group in what are called sampradayas. Now, in this particular planet that we are on, in this material universe, there are many. We're only one little tiny planet. There are four principal Vaishnava sampradayas. Vaishnava sampradayas, of course, means lines of succession that teach about our relationship with Krishna or Vishnu. Vaishnava, of course, refers to Vishnu. So those four lines were, well, sampradayas were one that came from Lakshmi Devi. It's called the Sri Sampradaya. Another called the Rudra Sampradaya that came from Lord Shiva. Rudra is another name for Shiva. There was one, the Kumara Sampradaya, that came through the four Kumaras. And then there was the Brahma Sampradaya. The Brahma Sampradaya is of note because that is the Sampradaya that we are part of through our specific lineage. And as we know, in the very beginning of this universe, there was nothing but darkness. And Lord Brahma, the creator, the material creator of this universe, of all of this material manifestation that we see, was situated on a lotus flower. And he heard one word, two syllables, tapa, which means austerity, penance. Not knowing exactly what that meant, he sat and meditated. And after many, 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 many years of meditation, Krishna appeared to him first as the sound of the flute, and then he instructed him. Originally, he instructed him in four verses, which are found in the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, called the Chatur Shlokas, four famous verses, which are called the nutshell verses, which are the real basic philosophy. Then, of course, this became expanded. And Lord Brahma's knowledge increased to become very, very complete, understanding everything about the material and spiritual universes. So he's the leader of our sampradaya because the leader of the sampradaya means that Krishna directly spoke to them. So this isn't some modern person who makes something up and has some fantasies or some ideas or, you know, decides, okay, maybe this is the way things are. No. This is Krishna, God, directly revealing spiritual knowledge to the most highest, most enlightened beings in this universe. So, these four sampradayas are there, knowledge given directly to them by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then they come through this specific succession into this material world for thousands of years. Now, in modern times, when I say modern times, I mean, you know, within the last 1,000 or 2 years, in the course of eternity, and from back from the days of Lord Brahma and the beginning of creation, which is billions of years, modern times is, 900,000 years, we have four exponents of these sampradayas. The Rudra Sampradaya, the main exponent is Vishnu Swami. Sri Sampradaya is Ramanuja Swami. The Kumaras is Nimbarka Swami. And the Brahma Sampradaya is embodied by Madhvacharya. So our line is often called the Brahma Manva from Madhvacharya, Brahma Manva Gaudiya Sampradaya. And of course, Gaudiya refers to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So in our specific succession, Brahma spoke to his son Narada. Narada instructed many, many people, but in this line, he instructed Vyasadeva. And then many, many other people, spiritual masters are there. And a few thousand years later, Madhvacharya appears in about 1,000, I don't know if anyone remembers the date, but in the 11th century. Somewhere in that area, Madhvacharya appears, great exalted devotee. He travels to the Himalayas, and guess what? Vyasadeva, being a totally self-realized yogi and devotee, is still alive in Bhadrak Ashram up in the Himalayas. Madhvacharya goes to the Himalayas, takes instructions from Vyasadeva directly. Therefore, that's why we say it goes from Vyasadeva to Madhvacharya. And Madhvacharya has disciples, goes on through the years, then we get up into about the 1400s, mid-1400s, and then we have Madhavendra Puri, great Vaishnava devotee. His disciple is Ishvara Puri, And Ishwara told his disciples none other than Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And of course, because Krishna appears as a devotee in his incarnation of Lord Chaitanya, he, of course, as a devotee, takes instructions and surrenders to a spiritual master, in this case, Ishwara Puri. Lord Chaitanya has many followers. We have the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. We have all of his brother, Lord Nityananda's, all of his followers. So there's a couple generations where the whole Gaudiya Vaishnava world is filled with these great devotees. Narottam Das Thakur. We could go on and on with the glories of these devotees who are the immediate followers and second generation followers of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But then things, as they tend to do in this material world, they slow down a little bit. And we don't see so much activity after a few generations. Around 1700, we had the appearance of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, a great, wonderful acharya in our line, and his Shiksha disciple, Baladeva Jabhushana. And then we don't hear so much. It's not that there weren't spiritual masters. It wasn't that there weren't pure devotees. It wasn't that the Siddha possession didn't go on, because it does. But in the world, Vaishnavism, the worship of Krishna, was becoming less and less prominent. And so we get to the point where we have kind of a gap in prominent Vaishnava leaders, and Vaishnavism is kind of in the wane. And so by the time we get to the mid-1800s in India, very little worship of Krishna. We find that, especially in Bengal, the birthplace, the land of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it's predominated by caste Brahmanism, by impersonalism, Mayavadi philosophers who deny the existence of God. And those who claim to be Vaishnavas tend to be more sahajiya. In other words, those who do not have good moral character and falsely claim that they have some high realization, which they really don't. So basically, we kind of lost the real thing. It just wasn't there. Into this very bleak landscape of spiritual life is born Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur's great contribution to this world was in reviving the Vaishnava line. So he was a great Vaishnava acharya. He established Vaishnavism in many ways, which we'll talk about. He was also the father of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, another great exalted acharya in our line, who of course was the spiritual master of our own Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. And thus we see how this whole movement became rejuvenated, became enlivened from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Bhaktivinoda exhibited the highest standard of pure devotion. And he was, for the most part, until the very end of his life, a householder. He worked. He actually was a magistrate judge. He had a good job. He was a judge under the English. The English were in charge, but they gave great, entrusted great power to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. They had such great respect for him as a magistrate. But his contributions all the time, being in the household life and working, very responsible, his contributions were amazing. He was a prolific writer. I think this was mentioned a little bit earlier. He wrote over 100 books and literary works, mostly in Bengali, but he also wrote in English. He was highly educated in different languages. He was the author of Vaishnava songs, wrote Charanagati, Gitavali, these collections of songs. And if we think about those of you who are more familiar, who've been around, the temples and Krishna consciousness for some time, just think of the songs that we sing daily, practically. The Gaur Artik song in the evening, for the Sundar Artik. Jai Radha Madhava, which we just heard, that Srila Prabhupada had to sing before every Bhagavatam class. And most devotees' all-time favorite, Shabirada Gajajal, which we sing before taking prasadam. We can thank Bhaktivinoda Thakur for inspiring us to take prasadam in that way. Hariharaya Namaha, Vajabhakara Vatsal, which I don't know if they do anymore. We started singing it while the boga was being offered. And many, many well-known bhajans that many of you know and you sing all the time. We heard one just a few minutes ago. He also discovered the actual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he was a vigorous preacher of Krishna consciousness, which we'll talk about a little bit. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was born on September 2nd, 1838. Now, that's according to the solar calendar. That was yesterday. But according to the lunar Vaishnava calendar, which is based on a lunar calendar, which we use, the actual date is today. The actual date of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's appearance is today. And he was born in the village called Birnagar in the district of Nadia in West Bengal. Which is now West Bengal. Was it West Bengal then? Probably not. It's just probably Bengal. That's before the partition. Right? So anyway, but it's now in West Bengal. He was the third son of Anandachandra Dutta and Jagat Mohini Devi, who was named Kedarnath. That was his birth name, Kedarnath, which is the name of Lord Shiva. And he stayed many years in this world and left, disappeared June 23rd, 1914. So he had a reasonably long life, almost 80 years old. Again, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur began his spiritual studies, he found that it was difficult to even get information about Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and philosophies. Probably many of you have read Chaitanya Charitamrita, which is this wonderful compilation of all of the pastimes and philosophy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that Srila Prabhupada translated from Bengali. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, heard about Chaitanya Charitamrita, so he wanted to read it. He couldn't find one. It took him 8 years to find a Chaitanya Charitamrita, to find a manuscript. That's how far the movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had sunk in it. You couldn't even find Chaitanya Charitamrita anywhere in Bengal, hardly. So, of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had to obviously change that and make these books available. So he really turned the tide of the philosophy and religion throughout Bengal and Orissa. He established Vaishnavism as a very prominent, respected philosophy. Many people thought Vaishnavism was just sentimental. It was like for, I don't know, old ladies or something, or just something, you know, sentimental religion. He established it as a very, very strong, complete, and totally thorough philosophy. He gave the best explanation of all of the Vedic scriptures. He also worked with his son, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, the establishing this. At one time, there was going to be a great discussion or debate about what is a Brahmin and what is a Vaishnava. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was invited, and he decided to send his son, Bhaktisiddhanta. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, of course, was probably one of the greatest scholars that ever lived. Tremendously, tremendously educated in everything from mathematics, astrology. He was a Sanskrit teacher. He had so much knowledge. And of course, all of these smart Brahmins who were just interested in ritualistic ceremonies and not really interested in true devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna were there. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati thoroughly defeated them. Thoroughly defeated them and made many, many converts to the cause of pure devotional service, Vaishnavism. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur worked tirelessly in this way. He established new preaching methods to propagate Krishna consciousness. He formed Namahata groups, over 500. Now, of course, we have many groups throughout, I know in America, many places throughout the world, where devotees come together, they congregate, they have meetings weekly usually, and they discuss philosophy, they chant Hare Krishna, etc., etc. They help new people learn about Krishna consciousness. You think this is something we invented in ISKCON? No. Bhaktivinoda Thakur invented this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur established the whole principle of the Namahata group. Now we call them Bhakti Vritti group sometimes. This was all from Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He knew that the preaching had to go to every town and village, as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had instructed and predicted. So he led the way worldwide in spreading Krishna consciousness. He also prayed for a ray of Vishnu. He prayed for someone to come and help him. And that ray of Vishnu that he prayed for was his own son, his fifth son, who later became Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj Thakur. And then, of course, to assist the mission and complete the mission, continue the mission of Bhaktisiddhanta, we have Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Maharaj's foremost disciple, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, who came and then took the Krishna consciousness movement not only throughout India, as Bhaktisiddhanta had done, but outside of India to the Western world to spread Krishna consciousness everywhere. So Bhaktivedanta Thakur had a very exemplary life. As I said, he was a magistrate. He was highly successful, well-educated in English schools as well as Sanskrit. He had 10 children. Bhaktisiddhanta was his fifth. He traveled in many places. He was transferred in his positions to Calcutta, Jagannath Puri, Krishnanagar. He actually asked for the transfer to Krishnanagar so he could be near the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He took initiation from Bipin Bihari Goswami. That was his spiritual master. But he later accepted Jagannath Das Babaji, who's of course in our disciplic line, as his Shiksha Guru. So in this case, the disciplic succession went through the Shiksha line, through Jagannath Das Babaji. So I want to read in appreciation. This is Srila Prabhupada, and this was a lecture on Gaur Purnima, 1969. Gaur Purnima, the appearance of Lord Gauranga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but Srila Prabhupada thought important enough to actually talk about the contribution of Bhakti Vinod. I can get some water from somebody. No. By Lord Chaitanya's desire, we have come in the same line of the Siddhi succession. What was taught by Bhakti Vinod Thakur in 1896 that these teachings of Lord Chaitanya should be spread in the Western countries. By chance or coincidence, it is now happening. Of course, 1896 was the time when the first book of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, The Life and Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, came to North America, came to Toronto, to McGill University. That year that Krishna consciousness came to the West, it was also the birth year of Srila Prabhupada. Thank you very much. Thus, we should take it for granted that whatever is happening in the present moment by my humble endeavor is by the grace of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Practically, the Chaitanya movement was restarted by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We should take it that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the origin of the Krishna consciousness movement in its pure form. Bhaktivinoda wrote almost 100 books. Just imagine, he was a very responsible officer, a magistrate, a grihastha, and had many children. Although he had 10 children, he had to take care of children, the office of magistrate, and extra religious work. He was made superintendent of the temple of Jagannath because the government knew that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a highly advanced religious person. Whenever there was some religious question, he was consulted. In spite of all of his responsibilities as an officer or a family man with so many children, he executed his family life very nicely, or else he could not have produced such a child as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And at the same time, he served the Supreme Lord in so many ways. That is the beauty. He's written so many books, done so many things in spite of his duties. So as we said, he had this exemplary life. Somehow he was able to do so much with so little time, almost. And part of that is because, sometimes, you have seminars they give on time management or books on time management. Well, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had time management down. You may have heard, I'm going to read his daily schedule. This was his schedule. Between 7:30 and 8 p.m. he'd go to bed. He would then rise just before 10 p.m., light his lamp and write books until 4 a.m. So he's basically up all night. He slept 2 hours. He writes from 10 to 4. Kind of reminds you of Srila Prabhupada. Had a similar schedule of writing up through the night. Then he would again rest for a maximum half an hour. At 4:30 a.m., he would wash his hands and face, sit down and chant on his beads till 7 o'clock. At 7 a.m., he answered all correspondence. At 7:30, he read various religious and philosophical works. At 8:30, he received visitors, if any, or else continued to read till about 9:30. At that time, he walked back and forth on the veranda of his house, contemplating different religious questions and solving them in his mind. He would rest briefly from 9:30 to 9:45 a.m., it was a whole 15 minutes, then take bath and breakfast, which usually consisted of a half a quart of milk, two chapatis, and some fruit. At 9:55 a.m., the talker would don his uniform and leave the court in his carriage. And after doing all of this, you know, riding for 6 or 8 hours and chanting for about 8 hours, and he goes to work. At the lawyers and Englishmen were astounded by the decorous capacity for work. At 10 a.m. court began. He would hear between 30 and 50 cases per day, yet he'd be finished by 1 p.m. So you know how we hear now about these court cases drag on for 20 years? Now he'd do 30 to 50 cases in 3 hours, settle them. He finished by 1 p.m. Then it took the other magistrates 1.5 hours, he finished in 5 minutes. He took another 2 minutes to write the judgment in detail. And 1 p.m. he went home, refreshed himself, and returned to work around 2 p.m. to 5. So he's also working practically a full day. Every evening after his court duties, Bhaktivinoda Thakura would translate some Sanskrit religious work into Bengali by dictating it to his secretary. Then there was evening bath and a meal consisting of a little rice, two chapatis, and another half quart of milk. So you can see a very, very austere lifestyle. Slept very little, ate very little, and just did tremendous amounts of work. So this is the spiritual energy that was given to him by Krishna. So Bhaktivinoda is probably best known for his literary contributions. He wrote throughout his life. His most productive years were about 1892 to 1893. In those 2 years, he wrote 10 or 12 books, and he wrote many, many songs. His literary output included things like Jiva Dharma, Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, Harinam Chintamani, Vaishnava Siddhantamala, Prema Pradipa, Dasamala Tatra, Mahashiksha, Sri Krishna Samhita, Tattva Sutra, Tattva Viveka, and Datta Kashu. Those are some of just his more well-known ones, there are about 100 altogether. He also wrote the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, he wrote called Amrita Prabhava Bhasha Commentary. So he wrote a complete commentary on the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which Srila Prabhupada sometimes refers to in his writings. In fact, that was just Bengali. In English, he wrote the Bhagavad, its philosophy, ethics, and theology. And that was a lot of lectures on Srimad Bhagavatam. And then he wrote Sri Chaitanya, his life and precepts in English. And that was the book he sent in 1896 to McGill University, the same year that Srila Prabhupada was born. He started a journal, regular published journal called Sajjanatoshini, and he wrote hundreds of Vaishnava songs. And not, you know, these aren't just, okay, anyone can write a song or a poem or some. These are the songs that have endured for generations, the songs we still sing today. Three major songbooks are Anagari, Gita Mala, and Gitavali. Many well-known songs that we say, Gaurartik, Hari Harai Nama, Bhajans like Yashomari Nanda, Vipagari Shesha, the Bogarti, Guru Dev, Gopinath, Ohe Vaishnav Thakur, Manasa, Deha, Geha. I forgot, what was the one the kids sang? Shidabhakada, was it? I think it was, right? So in other words, all of these songs, very, very well-known songs that we sing to this day were in the Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Of course, he's also known for discovering the birthplace of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which was in great doubt. I think they thought it was over in Navadu at the time, because the Ganges River shifts dramatically. And sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, you can be a town, can be on one side of the Ganges, and 10 years later be on the other side. So at that time, he was living across the river in his home. And one night, he was up, and he saw a vision. He saw this brilliant light coming from what is now the Yoga Pit, the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And so he knew by this divine vision that this is where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually born, where he appeared. And then he began extensive study and research and got information from all the local Vaishnavas to completely confirm. Not just he had a vision, said, okay, I had a vision, this is it. No, he confirmed it through great research and study. And in 1887, he realized, he discovered the exact place where Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared on this earth. And to confirm it, he brought his Shiksha Guru, His guru, Jagannathas Babaji, who was 120 years old at the time, so old and crippled and elderly, 120 years old, you know. They had to carry him in a basket. He couldn't walk. When he brought him to their place, Sri Jagannathas Babaji jumped in the air and chanted and danced in ecstasy, confirming that this was the actual place. And then Bhaktivinoda Kaur went to beg money from every house in Calcutta to construct a temple at that place. Bhaktivinoda Kaur had spiritual vision. He knew what was to happen. He knew what was Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna's desire and how things were going to unfold in this Kali Yuga. He made three predictions. He said, a personality will soon appear, wrote Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and he will travel all over the world to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. His second prediction was, very soon the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan will spread all over the world. But when will that day come when people from America, England, France, Germany, and Russia will take up kartals and mridangas and chant Hare Krishna in their towns? And his third prediction was, when will that day come when the fair-skinned foreigners will come to Sri Mayapur Dham and join the Bengali Vaishnavas to chant Jai Sachinandana, Jai Sachinandana? When will that day be? So he had this foresight. He could see the work that Srila Prabhupada would be doing in the future. And then, a little more developed, it says, in his monthly Vaishnava journal, Sajjatoshini, he wrote, Srimad Mahaprabhu did not descend with his associates to deliver a certain number of human beings in the land of India, but rather his purpose was to deliver and uplift all living beings in all countries of the world by practicing the eternal religion of the soul. He quoted from Chaitanya Bhagavat, Lord Chaitanya saying, my name will be preached in all countries and towns that exist throughout the world. He then prayerfully invoked the Lord and expressed his heartfelt desire. There are many kinds of religion in the world, and among them, all of them, the highest development of religion is the congregational chanting of the Supreme's divine names. Of this there is no doubt. When will that day come when the greatly fortunate souls in countries like England, France, Russia, Prussia, and America will take up banners, kettledrums, mridangas, and kartals, and cause the ecstatic waves of Harinam Kirtan and the singing of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's holy name to rise in their towns and cities? But when will that day come when the pure and transcendental Vaishnava Prema will be the only religion of all souls, and all tiny sectarian religions will meet in the unlimited and universal religion of Vaishnavism, as rivers merge into the great ocean? Oh, when will that day come? So we were so fortunate that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared on this earth and brought this Hare Krishna movement to all of the world and predicted and saw and played his part, was instrumental in the spreading of this Krishna consciousness himself and through his son, disciple Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and through his grand disciple, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Srila Prabhupada. I was trying to see how I could work some product placements into this lecture, but I'll just go ahead and speak in. Srila Prabhupada's work is not his own. Srila Prabhupada came in the order of his guru and the order of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur to fulfill their desires to spread Krishna consciousness throughout the world, which was the desire of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada was an extraordinary personality who touched the lives and the hearts of everyone he met. So we have a wonderful opportunity to learn more and hear more about Srila Prabhupada through this wonderful Hare Krishna movie that is now being played. A member who asked me to not only ask people to go and see it or see it again if you've already seen it, but bring a friend. Bring new people. Most of the people who have gone to see the movie, frankly, have been the devotees, and we've all loved it and enjoyed it and felt very close to Srila Prabhupada. But it's a great gift to the world if we also can bring other people to understand the contribution of Srila Prabhupada. Because to me, what my takeaway from this film was, beyond everything else, it gave you a real feeling, something very real and tangible about who Srila Prabhupada was, how he impacted the people around him, and how he impacted and just instilled love in his devotees and disciples. And so that's a wonderful message of faith and hope that we can spread to many people. And the other message of faith and hope that we can spread is by bringing the works and the words of Srila Prabhupada to these people and to ourselves. So again, as was announced today, this is a very auspicious time called Bhadra Purnima, and it's particularly auspicious for the distribution of the Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam is the life work of Srila Prabhupada. It is also the most revered scriptures to all Vaishnavas. If you read the words of Bhaktivinoda Thakur or Rupa Goswami or any of the acharyas in their line, there is one source of proof that they always give. You will read over and over that they confirm their words and their statements and their assertions from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So the Srimad Bhagavatam, this is like the Bible of the Vaishnavas. This is the final word. Srimad Bhagavatam is our life and soul. It is where our faith is derived from. It is where we go for the answers to the questions of life. So, if any of you do not have a Srimad Bhagavatam full set, I hear there are only 7 in the back lobby. So this is a great time to also read the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that will be very, very pleasing to Bhaktivinoda Thakur and to Srila Prabhupada. So thank you very much. Actually, I'll end there. And maybe a minute or two if there's a comment or question. Yes, Lila Sukh, how
much did you? What was it that you were reading from last?
What was I reading? My gosh. No, I just made it up. No, what was it? Let's see. I'm trying to get this. So, yeah, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prediction. It was from the Sajjana Toshini, and I don't have written down exactly where I'll try to find it. I don't have it written down.
Would you need some time to read the last 2 sentences again about Gnostic?
About, oh, okay. Oh, when will they come when the pure and transcendental Vaishnava Prema will be the only religion of all souls, and all tiny sectarian religions will meet in the unlimited and universal religion as rivers merge into the great ocean? When will that day come? It's very nice. He's not discounting other religions. He's saying that they're all included within Vaishnavism. They will all come together within Vaishnav philosophy. Okay, anything else? Yes, please. I heard that the movie is coming through Thursday. That's a great question. And I hear there's several showings a day. And you can go to, where to go to? Hare Krishna the movie?
HareKrishnaTheFilm.com.
HareKrishnaTheFilm.com. And you go to wherever the tab is that says showings or something. Screenings. HareKrishnaTheFilm.com. Click on screenings and it'll tell you all the times and days.
So that'll be three weeks that it'll run in the...
Yeah, that's over two and a half weeks of showing. It's pretty good. Now, Yadavar was telling me that it's a little erratic. Some nights are really full and some nights have not been so full. So, you know, we want to really pack the houses, so bring people there. Cool. Skip Yamaraj in the back and then Kalyapani.
Thank you, Tanahan, for the very informative class. I have one question, though. When I was saying that Lord Chaitanya's, this is Lord Chaitanya's movement, and he wants us to spread this out of the world. So, now, does that include, for example, different Gaudiya maps? Are they in this line, or how does that work?
Well, it's described that there are many branches of the Chaitanya tree, and there's like a couple hundred different prominent devotees, immediate associates of Lord Chaitanya that are mentioned in Charitamrita, and so there are many branches and many trees.
where this movement will be spread. Of course, we're directly in the line of Srila Prabhupada, as Srila Prabhupada's followers, and I think that I don't even need to make an argument for the contributions of Srila Prabhupada and what he's done. And I think out of that gratitude, I feel very, very safe following Srila Prabhupada, following Srila Prabhupada's movement, and helping him to whatever little degree we all can in spreading this Krishna conscious movement for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay.
We just occurred to me that Srila Prabhupada was our Srila Prabhupada was 25 years old already when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur left the planet. But I never heard of any contact or any kind of direct link between Prabhupada and Bhaktivinoda.
No, I haven't either. Most of the standard is, of course, about Siddhanta Saraswati. I think, from what we're looking at, it is Prabhupada appeared in 1896. You know, the early 1900s, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had really completed his active preaching. I think by about 1906, he moved to Jagannath, and someone can correct me, he moved to Jagannath Puri and then became a little more reclusive, a little less active, and eventually went into Samadhi. And so Prabhupada would have been, say, 10 years old or 12 years old, you know, by the time that Bhaktivinoda was, so actually he'd only be 18 when he disappeared. Because 1896 to 1914. Yeah, so, you know, he, in other words, there would not have been probably a lot of overlap during Bhaktivinoda. You know, this probably would have been a child during Bhaktivinoda Thakur's active preaching. But of course, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati really took up that active preaching for his father, Bhakti, you know. Right. Okay. And now we'll all enjoy the Shariyata Vijayal and go take Prasadam. Hare Krishna.